Bring us our first message. We have a servant of God's people, a deacon here in God's church, Mr. Dave Hall.
And now we can look forward to the second message that will be brought to us by a man who has served in God's church for many, many years, Mr. Ted Budge.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's good to see you all again. One thing I want to comment on with regard to praying for others, and especially those who are sick. I think it's important when you look at when Christ healed the paralytic in Leviticus 5. One of the things before Christ healed the man, he stated that it was the faith of those who were in the room that caused him, that allowed him, the man, to be healed. And I think sometimes we wonder, why are we praying for somebody? Because God looks for the whole. What's our faith? It's just not the individual's faith, but it's all of our faith. So that's why it's important to pray and to think about these things and to put it in God's hands, because God's not only looking at the one who is going through the trial, but he's looking at how we all react. And it's just something to think about in Luke 5. First of all, also I want to thank the ladies for the scripture reading. I loved it. And a piano playing. We have real live piano. That is so cool. I just love it. So thank you for all of everybody's efforts here today. I know it's a little warm in here, but we'll make it through. But if you fall asleep, that's okay, but I will call on you. I always threaten my kids with that, and they knew I wouldn't do that. It happened to me one time when I was a young person in church. I was passing notes, and the minister singled us, four of us, out and then made us go back to our parents. I was about 15 years old, and it just made a very negative impact on me. So I won't do that. I won't call you out. Today, I would like to discuss an attitude that has a significant impact on one's life. And the attitude which I'm going to discuss can be very subtle. Sometimes we don't even realize we've embraced it. We may not even realize how deeply it is ingrained in our personality, in our everyday communications, in our thought process, and it's so destructive, especially in relationships with others, especially our spouses, our children, our coworkers, and our friends, and ultimately in our relationship with God. To analyze this attitude, I'd like us to turn to Luke 17, verse 12, if we may. Luke 17, verse 12. It states, "As he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers who stood at a distance and lifted their voices, saying, 'Jesus, Master, have mercy on us.'" Now, leprosy is a disease that's been known since biblical times. Today, it's known as Hansen's disease. And in fact, at County USC, we have a unit, the Hansen's disease unit, that still treats this disease. Left untreated, leprosy can be progressive, causing permanent damage to the skin, nerves, limbs, and eyes. And contrary to folklore, leprosy does not cause body parts to fall off, although they can become numbed and diseased as a result of infection. And the infection results in tissue loss, so fingers and toes become stunted and shortened and deformed as cartilage is absorbed into the body. So you may be wondering, what does leprosy have to do with this attitude I'm going to speak on? Please bear with me. Throughout history, leprosy was feared and misunderstood. For a long time, it was viewed upon as hereditary disease or a curse or a punishment from God. And even before the discovery of the biological cause, leprosy patients were stigmatized and shunned. For example, in the Middle Ages in Europe, leprosy sufferers had to wear special clothing and ring bells to warn others they were close. They would have to walk on a particular side of a road, depending on the direction of the wind. In ancient times, the only way to stamp out leprosy was to isolate them. In Leviticus 13:46, you don't need to turn there, it states, "All the days wherein the plague shall be in him, he shall be defiled. He is unclean. He shall dwell alone. Without the camp shall his habitation be." So the leper had to separate himself or herself from the pure. In other words, they were separate and they were alone. They were cast into exile. And as the extreme agony and as an outcast, the leper would tear their clothes in grief. His head was bare to express extreme humiliation. He put a covering on his upper lip and cried out loud, "Unclean, unclean," so the pure would stay away and not risk contagion. Can we even imagine a leper's terrible fate? Looked upon with horror, forced to leave family and friends and cast out of the camp. People fled when they heard the cry, "Unclean, unclean." The pure ran from them because of their uncleanness and defilement. The lepers lived a horrible existence amongst themselves, but nothing to look forward to but increasing suffering and death. How would we feel? How would we feel if we lived during those times and a cure was provided? Let's go back to Luke 12 and let's go to verse 13. When he saw him, he said to them, "Go now and show yourselves to the priest." And as they went, they were cleansed. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. And he fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. Now he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus, verse 17, then Jesus answered, "Were not 10 cleansed? Where are the 9? Was not no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" And he said to them, "Rise and go your way. Your faith has made you well." Only one of the 10 came back to express appreciation for what happened. Now I can imagine the 9 were ecstatic. They were healed. They were no longer outcasts. They didn't have to yell, "Unclean, unclean." And I imagine they went to their families and friends and hugged them and embraced them. But they failed to express appreciation for what happened to them. How can a person whose suffering was so much, who could not support himself or his family, even if he had one, receive such a blessing and not go back to Christ and thank him? Now, it would be easy for us to judge the 9 individuals who failed to express appreciation for what they've been given. It seems so apparent how wrong they were. But apart from the words "thank you," how thankful are we? Do we actively show appreciation to others, to our parents, to our children, to our spouses? Would the people we interact with on a daily basis, let's say our coworkers, our family, see us as an appreciative person? Or maybe we're seen as an unappreciative person, a person who fails to see the contribution of others, or maybe even God in our lives. Today, I would like to focus on the impact of ingratitude in our lives. Webster's dictionary defines ingratitude as forgetfulness of or poor return for kindness received. Forgetfulness of or poor return for kindness received. It could also be defined as not appreciating or valuing what we have or what we have been given. Unexpressed gratitude is also ingratitude. In this fast-paced world we live in today, most people don't seem to have the time to express thankfulness. Work, family, soccer practice, doctor's appointments, countless other things are the main priorities. And it can be safely said in our society today that people just don't seem to have the time to thank others. And in its simplest state, it's a basic state, ingratitude is a form of robbery. It robs those to whom gratitude is due. The withholding of theirs, which is theirs, is justly theirs. And ingratitude can be hurtful. It can hurt the person that endures it. It can also hurt the person to whom appreciation is not shown. That person may become disappointed and discouraged that their actions were not properly acknowledged. How many times have we experienced, us individually, the disappointment of ingratitude? There's a story of Ed Spencer who jumped into the cold waters of Lake Michigan and saved 17 people when the Lady Elgin sank. It was a steamship and sank in Lake Michigan. It was a steamship that sank in 1860. When he brought the 17th person to safety, he collapsed upon the shore. Throughout the night, as he laid in the infirmary, he kept saying, "Have I done my best, fellows?" Ed Spencer gradually recovered from exposure and the exertion of that night, but it broke its health, from which he never fully recovered. He moved to California, where he spent the rest of his life in seclusion. When he died at age 81, the newspaper told the story that and stated that not one of the 17 people he saved ever thanked him for what he had done. Ingratitude can also harm the one who's not expressing gratitude. For the person who fails to express gratitude fails to properly see how God and others have impacted their lives in a positive way. For if they did, they would be sure to express appreciation to others and for God in many ways. Ingratitude is a double-edged sword. Parents can be hurt when children, for whom they lived for and sacrificed, prove ungrateful. Children can be hurt when their parents do not properly acknowledge their efforts and only focus on their shortcomings, as if they are to be somehow perfect in this life. We do not know how we hurt our friends, our family, our spouse, when we treat them without proper appreciation, forgetting all they've done for us and how we repay them, their favors, their kindness, with indifference. Whatever we may say about a person's ingratitude to others, there's no doubt about one's lack of gratitude to God. We receive blessings from God. Indeed, our calling, our understanding of this meaning of life, as the first message talked to us about, the incredible time ahead, the life we're living, and we understand what life is about and the meaning of life. Is that not a great blessing? And yet, there are days we probably don't express any appreciation to God, even for the little things in our lives. Our prayers may acknowledge the majesty of God, how great God is, and then largely go into requests for help and favor, but very little expressing appreciation. How many of us remember to give thanks for answered prayer? Maybe unanswered prayer. How many of us give thanks for our calling? How many of us give thanks for the blessings we have to understand the meaning of life? How many of us are like the 9 lepers? 2 Timothy 3, verse 1 states, "But know this, that in the last days perilous times will come, for men shall be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure, rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying its power, from such people turn away." The end times will be a time where people are generally, society is generally, unappreciative, unthankful. And the lack of appreciation, the ingratitude, extends not only to not appreciate what we have, what others do for us, it's not appreciating the relationship we have with God. Romans 1, verse 21. It states in Romans 1, verse 21, "Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, they neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened." the New Testament commentary provides the following analysis in verse 21. Whether you acknowledge God's existence is not the question. Even the demons believe in God, and their belief make them tremble. The issue, rather, is that you do not glorify him or thank him. You do not relate to him personally as who he is. It is this initial failing that produces the long downhill slide. Once God is no longer in your thinking, everything becomes futile or vain. Your heart becomes spiritually undiscerning, lacking God's light. It can only be darkened. What does the rest of the Romans chapter say about those who are unthankful? Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, in verse 22, and changed the glory of incorruptible God into an image made of corruptible man, into birds, into four-footed beasts, and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves. One of the hallmark traits of those who would reject God in their knowledge is that they become unthankful. The danger of ingratitude, of being unthankful, is that it can have a dramatic impact in our lives. It can impact the view of what we have, our view of others, and our view of God. How it impacts what we have is it can impact how we manage our finances. Despite the recent economic instability in our nation, we have so much wealth in the United States that we take for granted simple blessings. What was considered poverty not too long ago, 100 years ago, far exceeds the standard of living most people enjoyed. What we consider to be poverty today far exceeds the standard of living that most people enjoyed a century ago. We live in a society that's fascinated by technology and gadgets, a society of incredible abundance. I can safely say that we have probably gained more possessions for ourselves today than any other time in history. We have reached a point in history where such things as food, clothing, shelter are no longer seen as a blessing, but as our right. We have a great portion of the world that looks to the Western world and sees great wealth, and we tend to view it as what we are entitled to. The problem is we may find ourselves encountering a situation that causes us to tighten things and reduce our standard of living. Society and economy will cause that to happen sometimes, where we have to pull back. Maybe a change in job or unemployment, we have to pull back. But then we see others attaining things that they can have. And we may become upset because we feel we're being denied what is rightfully ours. Luke 12, verse 15, and it says, he said to him, take care, be on your guard against all covetousness, for life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. The New Living Translation provides the following rendition of this scripture. Then he said, beware, guard against every kind of greed. Life is not measured by what you own. From television commercials to programs to movies to shopping malls, there's a widespread attitude of entitlement and selfishness that sweeps the nation. Adults and children appear to be more and more becoming ungrateful, more unthankful every day. And the major accelerator of this attitude is commercialism. Society has been caught up, work as hard as you deserve so you get a new car and vacation in the Bahamas mentality. And this, in turn, has caused many to believe the ideology that if they do not acquire luxuries in this life, that life somehow is treating them unfairly. The people find themselves getting themselves into financial difficulties in order to attain what they believe is the American dream. one United States president made the following statement. We have been the recipients of the choicest blessings of heaven. We have been preserved these many years in peace and prosperity. We have grown in numbers, wealth and power as no nation has ever grown. But we have forgotten God. We have forgotten the gracious hand which preserved us in peace and multiplied and enriched and strengthened us. And we have vainly imagined in the deceitfulness of our hearts that these blessings were produced by some superior wisdom and virtue of our own. The president was not a modern day president, but it was Abraham Lincoln. This is a tremendously powerful statement. Since the time that Abraham Lincoln gave this speech, the wealth and the prosperity and the peace experienced by the United States is far greater. Along with it comes the attitude of pride, selfishness, and ingratitude. We can be unthankful in a variety of ways. We can be unthankful for the many things we have, wanting more. We can be unthankful for the relationships of those around us. We can also be unthankful in our relationship with God. And the ingratitude is destructive. And it's based on how we view what we have and on our relationship with others and in our relationship with God. So we need to guard our mind, guard our thoughts. And so what are the ways we can identify an ungrateful frame of mind in our lives? At this time, I'd like to cover 5 symptoms of an unthankful frame of mind. The first symptom, complaining. People who are unthankful will tend to have negative personalities where they find it easy to complain about little things and easily become moody. People who are deeply rooted in positive or thankful patterns of thinking become negative, complain. And thus, when something pushes their buttons, they quickly forget about the blessings they have and begin to complain and to grumble, to become dissatisfied with their situation. And this brings about a negative personality or mood. This explains the Israelites when they would go about complaining, even after God delivered them from the hands of their enemies. In Numbers, we are told how the Israelites were grumbling over the manna that God was giving them every morning when they woke up. So God heard their complaints and said the following, Numbers 11, verse 18. Numbers 11, verse 18. And I'd like to read from the New Living Translation. Numbers 11, verse 18. And say to the people, purify yourselves, for tomorrow you will have meat to eat. You were whining, and the Lord heard you when you cried, oh, for some meat, we are better off in Egypt. Now the Lord will give you meat, and you will have to eat it. And it won't be for a day, or 2, or 5, or 10, or even 20. You will eat it for the whole month until you gag and you're sick of it. For you have rejected the Lord who is here among you, and you have whined to him, saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? The second symptom of an unthankful frame of mind is unforgiving. Unthankful people can be unforgiving towards themselves, towards God, and towards others. In Matthew 18, we see a picture of an unthankful servant who was forgiven of a great debt, but could not forgive his fellow servant of a much smaller debt. If the person is bitter or holds things against others, then it shows that they are thankful for what God has done for them. In Matthew 18, verse 32, it says the following, then the king called in the man he had forgiven and said, you evil servant, I forgave you the tremendous debt because you pleaded with me. Shouldn't you have mercy on your fellow servant just as I have mercy on you? Then the angry king sent the man to prison to be tortured until he paid his entire debt. Third symptom of an unthankful frame of mind, dissatisfaction. Unthankful people tend to be dissatisfied with whatever they have. It's never enough. They only want more. This is an obvious sign. Greed is a sin that causes us to become unthankful for the things that we have been blessed with. One can become frustrated when they're thinking about the things they don't have rather than the things that they do have. In this mindset, people get into all sorts of financial trouble. They find themselves going into debt, buying things they cannot afford, because the desire to have outweighs the desire to be financially responsible. Or if they do have the money, they spend it recklessly, only to find out they have spent what they had with little to show for it. Luke 15, verse 11. And again, I will read from the Living Translation. It says in Luke 15, verse 11, to illustrate the point further, Jesus told him the story. A man had two sons. The younger son told his father, I want my share of your estate now before you die. So the father agreed to divide his wealth between his sons. A few days later, this younger son packed all his belongings, moved to a distant land, and wasted all his money in wild living. There are many times when young couples, as soon as they get married, they try to accumulate everything mom and dad had all at once, not realizing that it took their parents a long period of time to get where they are. And unfortunately, these young people accumulate memories and things in a very short period of time, usually with an incredible amount of debt. Then they find themselves quickly out of money, and life becomes very, very difficult. What do they do now? There's not enough money to meet expenses. It was fun when there was money and things, and the memories are great, but when that money is gone and the fun is over, the stress over the financial mistakes take a far toll, a huge toll on the couple, and outweighs the joy of attaining those memories of those things. Fourth symptom, improper stewardship. Unthankful people do not take care of the things that they have. Those who are thankful for the good things God has given them will take care of the things they have, whether it be their mind, their car, their body, the spouse, the children, their job. Taking good care of things tells others that it means something to us and that we're thankful for them. Not that we should ever worship things, and I'm not saying that, but we should take good care of them. For example, we should be taking care of ourselves. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19. Or do you not know that the body is the temple of the Holy Spirit from which you have from God? You are not your own, for you were bought with a price. So glorify God in your body. We should be taking care of our children by providing an inheritance. And this is much more than financial, but a legacy of character that we pass to our children. We should be taking care of our finances, appreciating what we have, especially when compared to the rest of the world, and properly manage our finances against the many pulls we have, daily pulls to spend our earnings. If we have an ungrateful mind, if we're an unappreciative mind, and we fail to see what incredible blessings we have, even in our minimal possessions, we can find ourselves taking financial risks that could ultimately backfire. Fifth symptom, pessimism. People who are unthankful tend to be pessimistic. Optimism is defined as a disposition or tendency to look at the more favorable side of events or conditions and to expect the most favorable outcome. Pessimism is defined as the tendency to see, anticipate, or emphasize only bad or undesirable outcomes, results, conditions, problems, etc. Also, the belief that the evil and the pain of the world are not compensated by the goodness and happiness. A pessimist will try to justify their pessimism by saying, I'm just a realist. I counter this by an optimist is a constructive realist who doesn't ignore problems but always sees the good potential and possibilities from challenges, from even problems. A pessimist sees things more limiting and problems as overwhelming. The 10 spies discouraged the Israelites from entering Canaan because they were pessimists. They saw obstacles, the strong and giant Canaanites that were heavily fortified cities, instead of the opportunity to trust God and take the land. They stated, we are not able. They are too strong for us. They exaggerated reality. And they saw themselves as tiny, weak grasshoppers. And thus, their pessimism, what happened? It spread to all the people. And it created a defeatist attitude among them. They wanted to play it safe, to regress instead of making progress. And the ultimate the ultimate punishment was that they were not allowed to enter the land of Israel. A heavy price for pessimism. Now, we need to ask ourselves, do we have these symptoms? Do we complain? Are we unforgiving? Are we dissatisfied with what we have? Are we properly taking care of what we have? Are we pessimists? Because being unthankful or being thankful is a choice. It's a thought process. When we are unthankful, it tells a lot about our character. Perhaps the biggest danger we face today as regard to being unthankful is that we have so much that we take for granted. Unlike the Depression era where my parents grew up, most of us living today cannot really remember hard times as a whole. We've always been able to make it. How many of us would agree that we live in a thankless society? The majority of our culture lives with an attitude of entitlement. We live in a society where people feel they're entitled to better pay, better benefits, and more stuff. If one cannot afford something, the government should pick up the tab. We have basically evolved into a society, and really, when you look at ourselves, a bunch of spoiled people, a people of entitlement, especially when we compare ourselves to any of the many third world countries in this world. Too many never stop to give thanks for what they have, but loudly voice their desire to have more. The bottom line is people in society have enjoyed so many blessings that they've come to expect it. And unfortunately, when those expectations are not met, when perceived entitlements do not come, these same people express their frustration through anger and complaining. Hal Urban, an author and a teacher, wrote about an assignment he gave to his class. First, he raised a question in his class, and this was the question: how many times a day do you complain? He wanted to get the students to identify with the old saying, we seldom think what we have, but always think of what we lack. For over 20 years, Mr. Urban conducted this experiment with his college students. He asked his students to go for 24 hours without complaining. And typically, the first response to the assignment was, they complained. They didn't want to do that. He told his students not to stop the experiment because they blew it in the first hour. He said, that's okay. Just keep it going. Keep track of how many times you complain or how many times you almost complained and caught yourself and make a note of that. He wanted them to go for 24 hours. If possible, without complaining. Could they do it? That was an interesting question. So they had to keep track of any time on paper, and they followed that following day to discuss it in class. He asked his class of 30, his typical class of 30, who did not complain. They asked him first, how many did not complain? Do they think in their class without having a show of hands? And they all, typical answers, between 6 and 12 students probably did not complain in the 24-hour period. But the answer for all 20 years, they all complained. There was always a complaint. Everybody registered a complaint. The answer was consistent. So the question to us, could we go 24 hours without complaining? About complaining about our boss, our coworkers, our spouse, our children, our parents, our government. The commuter just cut us off with his car. So I'd like to challenge us this next week to go one day without complaining. Tally those times. And then consider at the end of the day how this impacts not only our lives, but those of the lives around us. So how do we break the influence of ingratitude in our lives? Whenever we think about throughout the day, will impact our personality and our mood. So the first step of breaking the influence of ingratitude is to change our thinking. Mahatma Gandhi once stated, "A man is but the product of his thoughts. What he thinks is what he becomes." If we spend our day thinking about negative things around us and things we can complain about, we'll most likely develop a pessimistic personality. It will pull us down, and since pessimism and optimism are opposites, whatever one we allow to feed our mind will eventually push the other farther and farther away. One of the vital steps to developing a thankful personality is to meditate. That is, to think about often the things of life we have to be thankful for. And it may be helpful for us individually to make a list and to keep that list nearby us and reflect upon them as we go throughout the day. We might find ourselves in a difficult situation at work, but have we considered how thankful we are for gainful employment when so many do not have it in this day and age? It may be a little more work at first, especially if our minds tend to program to think negatively, but this process is tearing down those strongholds of our mind and renewing them with positive thoughts. Philippians 4, verse 8. It states, "Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are honest, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things." Now, I'm not saying we should be Pollyannish and everything is beautiful and wonderful and because many in life, including many in this room, are going through difficult circumstances, of tough challenges. And of course, we need to be realistic. But it's important to focus on what we've been blessed with and what we have rather than what we do not have. One quote I would like to read regard to this perspective is as follows. "Instead of complaining that the rose bush is full of thorns, be happy that the thorn bush has roses." My challenge is for us to stop and ask ourselves, what have I been thinking about this past week, this past day, this past hour? If we truly want to change how we perceive things, then we will have to change the way we think. And we do that with God's help, with God's Spirit. If we want to develop a thankful mindset, then we need to meditate and ask God to help us to meditate and think about the good things we have been blessed with. Even if it seems we have nothing to be thankful for, at a minimum, we should be thankful for the calling God has given us, the understanding of the purpose of our existence on this earth, when so many don't understand it at all. In our daily hustle and grind, our search for happiness in this life, which is sometimes tied to what we wish or want and wish we could have, in reality, we have so much. It's not easy to have this mindset when the world is crashing upon us, but it's good to step back, to disengage what's pressing us, and reflect upon what's really, truly important. In our darkest moments, in our toughest times, 1 Corinthians 2:9, you don't need to turn there, gives us the following encouragement. "But it has written, eye has not seen, nor ear has heard, neither have entered into hearts of man, the things that God has prepared for them that love him." An incredible thought, incredible encouragement. The second step to breaking the influence of ingratitude, of unthankfulness in our lives, is to show appreciation to others, to God. Too often in our stress-filled lifestyle, we become focused on what we're doing and the stresses we face, and we become self-absorbed, and unfortunately, we could take it out on those closest to us, either indirectly or directly with words or by becoming disengaged. In those times, rather than show appreciation for what others do or for the fact they're in our lives, we can become short, dismissive, hurtful. Words have a powerful effect on people. on those who hear him. That's why companies pay so much for advertising. Say a thing often enough, and people will start believing. We need to put a priority on showing appreciation for what others do. It's more than just saying a quick thanks. It can be spending time with this person and seeing how they're doing and really listening. It can be volunteering to do something to help someone else. It can be letting a person know how much you appreciate them and tell them why. We can also show our appreciation and communication with God by letting God know how much we appreciate the understanding we've been giving. To appreciate the opportunity to live life even with all its troubles and challenges, and to experience what it has to offer, a gorgeous sunset, the ocean's waves crashing on the beach, the laughter of a young child. We can thank God for giving us life and valuing the lives of others. Unfortunately, these days, people don't value life and don't value others. I would like to read you a quote I read in a magazine. "You are more than ever the air that I breathe. I am certain that during the sweet, vulnerable little soul entrusted to us, because we have such a special love, I am more than ever looking forward to our lives together. Thank you so much for the past 9 months for little Ryan and for being the best wife and soulmate a husband can have." The reason why this quote caught my attention is that this was a message from a husband to wife a few days after she'd given birth to a son with Down syndrome. At the time of the writing, they would know that they would have heart surgery. The family, according to the author of the article, is still thriving, just as predicted in the letter. I had a younger brother who recently passed away, who was developmentally disabled. Though I wish he would have not had the disability, I can honestly say my life was enriched and blessed because I had the opportunity to know him. At times it was not easy, especially after my both parents died and he who lived at home had to get used to living without him. He was my fourth son. He was one I took care of when I was a child. He was my younger brother. Now, it wasn't without its moments. I remember I would always answer his phone call wherever I was. If he called, even my wife didn't get that privilege, but whenever he'd call. So one time I was at church. Get the call, so I run outside. "David, what's up? What's up?" he says. And it was during the playoffs, he was a Packer fan, and it was a Saturday game. So he goes, "Ted, Brett Favre just threw a touchdown." I'm like, I miss him because he was so genuine and so honest, and he was such a positive influence in my life. Of that, I'm most grateful. The Bible encourages us to be thankful at all times. In everything, give thanks. This is the will of God in Jesus Christ concerning you. This not only includes what we've been given, but being thankful for those around us. Galatians 6, verse 7. "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. A man reaps what he sows. Whoever sows to please their flesh, from the flesh he will reap destruction. Whoever sows to please the Spirit, from the Spirit will reap eternal life. Let us not become weary in doing good, for the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially those to the family of the believers." The thankful person is thankful to God for all the gifts, talents, and abilities, opportunities he has or she has, and they're gladly willing to give to others as he or she has that opportunity. This individual knows that everything belongs to God, and what he or she currently possesses came from God, and we are merely a steward of those possessions for a short period of time. The blessings we are receiving are to be used to God's glory, to blow that trumpet. And in sharing with others, we realize we're not sharing in our own things, but the many blessings God has given us. Being thankful, being unappreciative, can impact our lives in many ways. With regard to our financial situation, it could cause us to not value what we currently have. It can cause us to make unwise decisions based on perceived need. that reality is really only a want, that we really don't have a need. It's really only a want. By being unappreciative, we may find that we're not exercising proper stewardship of what we've been given. With regard to relationship, it can cause untold hurt to us and those others around us, those we relate to every day, especially those in our immediate families. Being unappreciative can impact the way we view life. We can find ourselves complaining, living in a state of dissatisfaction, negativity, and pessimism. Being unthankful, being unappreciative can not only impair our relationships with others, it can destroy our relationship with God. So much, it says in Romans 1:21, that our hearts can become darkened. To conclude this sermon, I would like to recite a quote from the Roman philosopher Seneca. "We can be thankful to a friend for a few acres or a little money, and yet for the freedom and command of the whole earth, and for the great benefits of our being, our life, health, and reason, we look upon ourselves as having no obligation. Even if we have a few physical possessions, even if we're going through incredible challenges, we have much to be thankful for. We have each other here. We have our families. We have our calling. We all have hope." And one final comment, don't forget to take one day this week and try not to complain. I will do this myself, and we'll probably all be surprised how much ingratitude has embraced our thinking.